Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hello, I'm Orlando Crowcroft, World Editor at IB Times UK. Welcome to In the Field, a podcast where each week we speak to reporters around the globe covering the stories that matter. This week we're looking at Egypt, the most populous country in the Arab world. Since the 2011 revolution, Egypt's been gripped by political and economic uncertainty. Fareed Fareed, a reporter on the ground who's covered Egypt widely for IB Times UK on how people feel about their new government and the economic and political problems that the country faces. After that, we're talking to Nahel Al-Sharif, a journalist also based in Cairo, who covers Egypt's social problems and particularly women's issues. Welcome, Fareed.
Thanks, Orlando.
So it's been a very busy week for Egypt, obviously a busy couple of weeks. We had the Mohamed Morsi verdict, which was perhaps not unexpected. We've had the IMF package. And of course, we've had General Abdel Fattah Sisi, the leader of Egypt. We've had him saying to Donald Trump, one of the first leaders to say to Donald Trump, well done on your election. So were you surprised that the kind of love affair we've seen already between Sisi and Trump?
No, I think strong men are attracted to each other. It's the same posturing and, flagrant rhetoric. They become strange bedfellows. It's no surprise that Donald Trump attracts anti-Semites and rabid pro-Zionists, as well as President Sisi. And that has currency on the Egyptian street. Unfortunately, in a country where conspiracy theories are rabid, and they become the talking points of everyday people. They believe the conspiracy theories about Clinton being a secret Manchurian candidate as part of the Muslim Brotherhood international organization, stretching all the way from Huma Abedin being her aide to theories about an American colonel still under hostage in Egyptian custody.
It's fascinating because I've actually seen a couple of tweets and Facebook posts by people in the Arab world
right.
who have said what they like about Trump is that he has advocated, isolationism, not going into countries like Iraq. He was against Afghanistan.
Right.
He's opposed to intervention in Syria.
Yeah, that doesn't carry. And even Jeff Sessions, one of the senators who's in the transition team, saying that one of the countries as part of the Muslim registry, the countries to be banned or citizens to be banned from entering the states, Egypt is on the list. Yet that doesn't deter Egyptians from, loudly backing Donald Trump because he gives the veneer of stability, which is also what Sisi has been telling the Egyptian people for the past 3 years. Yet so far, political promises have not been tangibly achieved.
It feels like with Sisi that he actually, you've written a number of stories on it yourself. I mean, everybody right. has kind of shown what a kind of buffoon he is. And yet he seems to be as solid in his position as ever.
Absolutely. So you mentioned about the isolationist rhetoric of Trump. The common mantra that's repeated almost in all of the worst talk shows in Egypt, and still television is king in Egypt, even though internet penetration is getting more by the day, well, at least we're not like Iraq and Syria. So that's always seen as the deterrent that Egypt is a bulwark, of stability surrounded by neighbors that are falling by the wayside. You have Libya, Syria, Iraq, and using all of these straw men to paint that Egypt is not good, but it's not bad.
Do people still talk about the revolution and what do they say about it?
No, I think it's been the counter-revolutionary machine in terms of the propaganda has made the revolution a dirty word. So all of the activists that have been locked up, the same people, I mean, it's the same baffling phenomenon of the same people who voted for Obama, the same people who voted for Trump in the Midwest. Well, it's the same in Egypt. You can say the same people who went out to the streets in 2011 are the same ones that went out in 2013 to overthrow, I wouldn't call it a democratic president, but in all senses of the word democratic, in terms of people having violet ink on their fingers. And then it's the same people who went out and said, we want this president to lead us into the future, who are complaining and grumbling, but are too afraid to do anything about it, and also sick and tired of protesting. So protesting now has become a dirty word in a sense. And it's backed up by legislation such as the draconian protest law, and just this week, a repressive law that regulates the work of non-government organizations. They've also been branded as traitors and conspirators, fifth column agents. It all feeds into this idea that Egypt is pure and it's being defiled by the West, yet it's when it comes to international financial institutions coming to Egypt, that's all well and good. So it's this contradiction that we're living in these days that's really interesting to be part of.
And amidst that kind of repressive police state that Sisi and his cohorts have created in Egypt, I mean, how is it working as a journalist, working for Western publications, writing stories like you did about kind of memes ridiculing Sisi and so on, right? You know, about his courts locking up a six-year-old, I think, or three-year-old that we did, that story.
Yeah.
I mean, how are you able to go about your work, and is there a risk when writing those kind of stories?
Yeah, I think you can't be too audacious these days as much as you want to be. You got to be understanding of the situation, because Egypt is one of the worst offenders in terms of jailing journalists, not just the famous Al Jazeera English case. But since then, there have been flagrant offenses of locking up journalists, censorship that's rife, and even self-censorship that I think many of us, foreign journalists and Egyptian journalists alike, are also complicit in. It's becoming harder, but that doesn't mean that we can't do the work. So I also don't want to play into this narrative in that, yes, the work is hard, but it's not a war zone as such. So you have to pick your stories, and there's no shortage because, I mean, absurdity is just taken to a whole new level on a daily basis.
Mm.
It really is. Every day there's hilarious, but they're comic and tragic at the same time, because that's the political moment that we're living in, and it's quite vexing. And you can't remove yourself from these stories in a way.
Do you find there's an interest from editors in Egypt for those stories nowadays, or is that waning?
I think it's always going to be a story. After 2013, a lot of people wrote off Egypt as like, it's not going to be the story. But I still think, as the most populous Arab country, one where it's been involved in pivotal political moments, not just with the Arab Spring, but also before that in terms of the Israeli-Palestinian case, Libya and so on, Egypt will always be this hub for journalists, but also for crazy stories.
I feel like with Syria the way it is, with Iraq, that there's not much interest in the Egyptian story, and that's sad.
Sure.
I wonder whether that will change, or whether it will just rumble on for another 30 years of dictatorship before it's overthrown in a revolution or a coup.
I get you. I don't think it'll take 30 years, but even if it happens again, so that's the crux. Okay, you have another revolutionary moment, let's say, where people rise up and overthrow a dictator or an autocrat. What are the alternatives in place? And that's what the regime is actually using. That's what Mubarak used in his final days. And even back in 2009, where he said, if I go, it's either me or chaos. And that's becoming true because it's the same Mubarak men are back in parliament. Mm. They're heading up human rights committees. They can be presidents of football clubs like the Zamalek Football Club and simultaneously be in parliament. There's hardly any conflicts of interest that are tabled, or they're there for the public to see, but there's nothing to stop people from accruing political and economic capital at the same time. I think it'll be a story somehow, but it'll be in that muted, stagnant tone compared to Syria and Iraq, unfortunately, even though there's a lot of let's say sectarian tensions, which I've also written about, that are rife. Police brutality is back in full force. Just this week, a Christian citizen was tortured in a police station, video widely shared, but his own family couldn't protest and wanted to shut down the graphic video evidence. Until that climate subsides a little bit, then people won't even think about going out.
And as an Egyptian resident, as someone who lives in Cairo,
yeah,
how is life now? I mean, are you feeling the effects of what is generally believed to be a kind of economic crisis, really, in Cairo, I mean, in Egypt?
Yeah, I can't speak directly to that because I travel a lot as well, but I'm not feeling the pinch compared to the average Egyptian, and that's people in my family who are solidly middle class, but it's becoming expensive. Egypt has taken important economic steps, such as lifting the subsidies that has been prescribed by various financial institutions for decades as a panacea to economic growth, but it's not substituting that with wages. The market is so arbitrary. The black market really rules Egyptian economy. There are no safeguards. A lot of people are making money, but a lot of people are suffering. The average income, 25% of Egypt live in abject poverty, under $2 a day. And there's not much above the $2 line. So it's a very, very a small slice of Egyptian society that's reaping the benefits of the devaluation and so on, but everyone is hammering. It's even affecting Egyptian students at international institutions who can't transfer money, who are studying here in the UK, for example, even though they're elites, but it's affecting everybody. And when it starts affecting elites, you know that there's a problem, that there's no roadmap, economic roadmap to get us out of this quagmire. It'll keep on sinking and sinking.
And as a freelance journalist based in Cairo, I mean, you could go to another city or another country if you wanted to. What keeps you in Egypt?
I think I have an insider-outsider perspective, being Egyptian myself. That gives me a bit of access when talking to people, where I can maneuver and wriggle my way into meeting, let's say, talking heads, politicians, but also everyday Egyptians who are affected by life, really. I think that keeps me grounded there. I'm lucky in that I also get to spend a lot of time outside of it just to stay sane. But it's just one of these magical places in Cairo that just sucks you in. It works to my nocturnal rhythms. And, there's no shortage of storytelling from people hanging out at cafes. I like to hang out and just keep my eyes open and my ears open to what's happening around us, because like I said before, there's levels of absurdity have been broken every day.
Cool. Thank you so much for your time, Fareed, and I look forward to more of your stories appearing in IB Times.
I really appreciate it.
If you're looking for plump lips that last, you need to know about Juvederm lip fillers. With Juvederm Volbella XC and Juvederm Ultra XC, your lip look, whether it's subtle or bold, can last up to 1 full year with optimal treatment and no additional maintenance. Find a licensed specialist and see if it's right for you at Juvederm.com today. That's Juvederm.com. Add fullness to lips in adults over 21 with Juvederm Volbella XC or Juvederm Ultra XC. Do not use if you have severe allergies or a history of severe allergic reactions, or if you're allergic to lidocaine or the proteins used in Juvederm. Tell your doctor if you have a history of scarring or taking medicines that decrease the body's immune response or that can prolong bleeding. Common side effects include injection site redness, swelling, pain, tenderness, firmness, lumps, bumps, bruising, discoloration, or itching. As with all fillers, there's a rare risk of unintentional injection into a blood vessel, which can cause vision abnormalities, blindness, stroke, temporary scabs, or scarring. For full, important safety information, visit Juvederm.com.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-.
So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
That was Fareed. Now we're going to talk to Nahal, who's been covering Egypt as a journalist since 2011. She's going to explain how that job has changed in the 5 years since the revolution.
It was crazy because, at least for me, I had no idea what was happening. It was bigger than other protests, but it was very weird. And then the protests that followed throughout 2011, even after Mubarak was gone, it was going very fast. And I think everybody, the media, the politicians, the activists, everybody was trying to figure out what was happening together. So it wasn't easy to report on, because you know that you realize that everybody is trying to interpret what's happening, but no one is really sure what's going to happen exactly.
Yeah, and I suppose it's difficult also as an Egyptian. I mean, you're very much wrapped up in events as well as, being a journalist.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you're worried about yourself, about your family. Your family's worried about you. You're trying to calm them down while also doing your job. And also other people look at you, like friends abroad would be getting in touch, trying to understand what was happening, and you try to explain to them, while it's not really easy because you're as a journalist, I'm not part of what's happening, but as an Egyptian, I am. So it was very tricky in the beginning.
Of course, yeah. And how has that changed compared to, you know, five years on? I mean, how is it different reporting in Egypt now?
People are tired of what the media is trying to tell them what to do. So they don't want really to talk to the media anymore. And some of them are suspicious. Some of them are just not interested. So on one level, it's not as easy to get vox pop, for example, in the street. It's very tricky. They could attack you. They could refuse. They could take you to the nearest police station. And on another level, I think after 2011, the government was trying to be more open to the media. And at some point, there were a lot of press briefings. Now, they're not really responsive to the media, whether it's the public or the government.
We've seen a major crackdown on journalists in Egypt in recent years, especially since Sisi. So that must be a risk also.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's one side. And the other side is that, are you going to be able to do the easy stories or the supposedly easy stories, like talking to people in the street, getting the atmosphere? And that's not very easy. I think people are now trying to do it on friendly basis, like ask friends of friends or friends of family. And right. Also, at the same time, these people are still worried, like they wouldn't want to do it on camera, for example. They would want to do it anonymously. And it's still doable, but it also, it doesn't look very credible somehow. So it's very tricky.
I know that an area that you're interested in, you've written about a lot, is social issues, particularly women's issues. I mean, is that, how is reporting on that particular area? Is that particularly difficult?
Not really. I think, like everything else, it depends on how you're doing it. Like, for example, I did a recent story about this. It's like a program to help women save money and get loans, but it's very informal. Like each group of women, they form their own group and they save money together, and then they get loan from the same group. And that's because they can't do it really with the banks, because first, the amounts are very little. Banks wouldn't give you this. Like it's like 500 Egyptian pounds, which is nothing now. And the other side, because a lot of them are illiterate, and to do it through the bank, you need a lot of paperwork. So this is done under the umbrella of a lot of international organizations. So when I was doing this, I was doing it through these organizations, or the National Council for Women, UN Women. These organizations help you when you go to the area. They put you in touch with people. And if you're going through them, people are more responsive to talk about the initiative, to talk about themselves. But if I'm going to walk around the street just asking people, for example, about women, about prices, I don't think I will be able to do it that easily. So that's one side of it. I think also, like, things related to violence and harassment. I think next week there will be 1 week of events related to violence against women and rape. And for me, that would be a very good opportunity, because there are lots of events, lots of speakers, a lot of people, even the audience, they are willing to talk because somehow the atmosphere encouraged them to it. But if it wasn't the case, maybe it would be a little bit difficult to talk to people on the street.
Those issues that you mentioned, are they worse under Sisi than they were under the Brotherhood or before the revolution?
Like harassment and violence?
Yeah.
I don't think so. I didn't look at them in terms of Mubarak revolution, Morsi, Sisi. It's somehow more related to the amount of coverage they're getting. I think it was around 2008. I'm not sure when the first big trial happened related to sexual harassment. And since then, it's been under the spotlight. And the more people report on it and talk about it, I think things are changing, even on a legal level. Like, laws are tougher. Social-wise, it's not changing that much, but, and maybe that's probably a very personal impression, but somehow right now, these past few months, I feel like men are thinking twice before catcalling, for example. So it's not, the problem under Mubarak is that the First Lady, for example, was denying it completely, and she was saying these are individual cases.
Right.
But after 2011, and of course there were a lot of incidents in Tahrir Square, people accepted it that, okay, it is a big problem and it's part of our society and we can't deny it anymore and the people in power cannot deny it anymore. But it's not really, I haven't seen it related to the change of people in power, but it's rather how people are focusing it and they continue to focus on it even when some people say, oh, enough with this, we've heard enough about violence against women. But the more they report on it, I think it's changing slowly, maybe.
Mm. And what about as an Egyptian day to day? We saw the devaluation of the pound. There's been serious economic issues for Egypt, not to mention political. I mean, what's it like living there now? Is there optimism or is there pessimism about the future?
I don't think there is optimism. I think it's a mixture between pessimism and there's a group of people who are thinking, okay, we have to go through this. We life moves on. So somehow there is a mixture between pessimism and acceptance.
Right.
But I think the problem is with the latest move, more people are feeling the crisis, and it was only maybe related to the lower classes and the lower middle class. Now even the upper middle class are feeling the problem, and there were protests at the American University in Cairo, for example, and I think it's seen as one of the most expensive universities, if not the most expensive in Cairo, and the rates are pegged to the dollar. So just one, like after the day when the government changed the rate, they found themselves that they will have to pay more than double for the next semester. And they've been protesting ever since. So I think that's the main thing, is that the crisis is hitting a wider range of people than it used to.
So that's the situation on the ground in Egypt at the moment. We've included rich links to some of Fareed's reports from Egypt in this podcast. So if you're listening on Acast, please be sure to go back and check them out. There's plenty more pieces on Egypt on the website as well. And for more information, please go to ibtimes.co.uk. Lastly, if you like this podcast, please subscribe on iTunes and leave us a review. Next week, we'll be focusing on the situation in Ukraine, 3 years on from Maidan. And we'll have an exclusive interview with feminist activist Inna Shevchenko. Until then, I've been Orlando Crowcroft, World Editor at IB Times UK. Thanks for listening and take care.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here, and it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.